Welcome to another edition of the All Souls Forum today here on KKFI. We're going to hear the city manager's report on today's show. Troy Schulte has been the city manager of Kansas City since 2010. Before that, he was the city budget director and holds a master's degree in economics from Iowa State and UMKC. The topic is an obvious one if you follow the city streets around. The need for infrastructure investment in Kansas City is our topic today. This program was recorded on Sunday, September the 7th of 2014 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show will follow its usual format today, and we will hear the report from Troy Schulte, then we'll take a break, owe you some messages, and then we'll come back with the question and answers from the audience. So let's go right to the introduction of Mr. Schulte.
Good morning, and welcome to the 71st year of All Souls Forums. I'm Rita Norton, a member of the forum committee that organizes these platforms for the discussion of significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values in the contemporary world. For your information, we are being recorded for in-church use and for probable broadcast on KKFI. Today is our second forum with Kansas City's City Manager Troy Schulte. Mr. Schulte has been working with the finances of Kansas City since 1998. His formal appointment as City Manager occurred in May of 2011. Kansas City, Missouri's City Manager is responsible for making city government run efficiently and economically. A tall order, I'd say, and one that fits perfectly with infrastructure investment. Mr. Schulte.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to this opportunity to kind of talk with folks about the going-ons in the city. I was able to bring my 7-year-old, so if the fire alarm goes off in the middle of this, you'll know who did that. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about the need for continued infrastructure investment by the city and how we continue to rebuild and renew the city's public infrastructure. As you know, Kansas City is a large city. It's about 318 square miles. It stretches from north of KCI all the way south to Richards-Gebauer. It's a huge city, 460,000 people trying to maintain that infrastructure across that a large city, and unlike a lot of maybe other bigger cities, with more, there's development in all corners of it. So, in the past few years, we've been very fortunate to have voter approval of three important funding initiatives. In 2012, voters approved a $500 million bond issue for wastewater improvements. We're in year 5 of our 25-year federally mandated sewer overflow control program at trying to address a $6 billion annual overflow of wastewater into our streams and rivers. I'm pleased to announce that we're on time and at least $40 million under budget on this important program. This investment has also allowed us to begin repairing 28 miles or 1% of our system every year. These efforts will minimize basement backups and street collapses due to collapsed or corrupted sewer pipes. And we're finding, as we're building the downtown streetcar, we're finding large holes large pipes. In fact, one of our 96-inch sewer lines that drains most of downtown, provides sanitary sewer, had collapsed in a couple of different places. So it's an old system. It had been neglected too long. This investment is allowing us to go back in and make those critical repairs. Your authorization of those bonds also allowed us to complete a sewer expansion program that is opening up 14,000 acres in the Northland for future development. This area will eventually support up to 70,000 new residents. It's the equivalent of about 3 Gladstones who will support the rest of the city. So that investment will, over the next 20 years, as more and more residents will build out into that area, will provide critical tax revenues back to the city for other needs throughout the city. In that same election, you also authorized a half-cent sales tax for parks that has helped to stabilize funding for our world-class park system. The benefit of that investment include more mowings of the parks and boulevards. We're now planting flowers again for the first time in a decade along our boulevard system. That's the one thing most people talk to me is they enjoy the flowers along the boulevards. We've also got longer hours at the city's 10 community centers, so we've got more activities for adults and, most importantly, youth in this city to gainfully occupy their time. And we have seen better maintenance of our fountains and numerous park facilities. This same sales tax, by redirecting existing resources, also provided more money for our street operations, allowing us to stabilize funding and make investments in snow removal. You may have seen the new crosswalks that are going in downtown, the new what they call a continental design, trying to increase visibility for pedestrians, make it easier for pedestrians to move around the city. It's also allowed us to upgrade our traffic signals, getting rid of old traffic signals that are not ability to be interconnected, so we can't do the interconnected, so we can connect it so it's easier to flow from one stoplight to another stoplight, as well as increased money for street resurfacing. And I see a lot of that going on in the Brookside area now, just off of Brookside Boulevard. It's their turn to have their streets torn up this fall. Lastly, this past spring, voters authorized $500 million in bonds for water system improvements. This will provide sufficient funding for the next 10 years to begin replacing 28 miles again, or 1% of the system every year. We have about a 2,800-mile water and sewer system in the city. Some of it is about 125 years old. Some of the sewer stuff is some of our sewer infrastructure is 150 years old. We just took out the last wooden water pipe in the City Market area about 10 years ago. So if you could truly get a splinter from drinking the water in Kansas City a few years ago. So we have a lot of old infrastructure that needs to be replaced. That authorization will allow us to begin to do that. You're starting to see those construction projects already occurring throughout town. And I'm pleased to announce that this will also means that because of the bond authorization and because of your past willingness to allow our rates, water rates, to go up so that we can maintain the infrastructure, that the days of double-digit water bill increases on the water side are over. We should be able to do back to inflationary 2 to 3, maybe 4% increases in our water bill for the next 5 years or so, and we'll then reevaluate. But we've got a funding system in place that allows us to maintain our structure. I wish I could say the same thing for your sewer bills. Your sewer bills are going to continue to move at about 15 to 13% a year for another 5 years, again, to deal with that federally required overflow control mandate. But once we do that, we'll have a chance to really try to diminish the amount of overflow that's occurring. And really, our overflow control program is the area between the river and 85th Street state line, roughly over to Cleveland, maybe even parts to 435 is where the areas where, when the city was built, they put the sewer pipe and the stormwater pipes. Instead of using different pipes, they put it all in one pipe. That was a great cost-saving initiative in the 1920s. It's lousy in the 2010. So we're in the process of trying to separate those sewers, fix the overflow issues, and that process will continue for another 20 years. But I'll give you an example of how far we've come. In 2010, there were 3,600, right after I became acting city manager, there were 3,600 open 311 cases in our pipeline division. And that's what we call our water distribution group. That's either broken fire hydrants, broken water lines, leaks running on the street. There were 3,600 cases. As of last Friday, there were 5. So that your investment has allowed. I just got a tweet. We've got one more down at 17th Street, so we're back up to 6. So there's never a dull moment in this job. But your investment has allowed us to be very aggressive in having a zero tolerance for water on the streets and beginning to be very aggressive in repairing our streets. The days of we used to track metal plates. and there were metal plates that were literally 900 days had been in the street. We had paved around them. They had been so long. We now work with our private contractor, and we get all the metal plates off the road from the time the water repair is done to when the street is fully restored. 90% of those cases are actually we're at 87% of our case. 87% of our cases are being completely repaired in 30 days or less. So the days of the long-term metal plates are going away. We get Google Fiber constructed, and hopefully we'll have far fewer metal plates going forward. So we've done all of that. Means your investment allowed us to do quicker response to water main breaks, more working valves, and more working fire hydrants, and less water running on the streets. I want to talk a little bit about how we've done a lot, but we need to keep going. We cannot rest on our laurels. We need to keep investing. We need to do this now so that our children and grandchildren don't have to pay the full bill for our continued neglect. And the residents of the city have been very supportive of that effort. And I want to kind of outline a couple of initiatives I'm going to be proposing to the City Council, and eventually it will come to you as residents and voters in Kansas City to decide if you're comfortable making these continued investments. But these are investments in basics. These are not investments in new amenities or anything like this. This is just maintaining what we've already got. Over the next 2 years, I will be recommending to the Mayor and City Council three initiatives to continue reinvesting in our infrastructure. The first proposal will be to remove the current cap on stormwater impervious surface fees. That's that $2.50. If you're an average homeowner in Kansas City, average-sized lot in Kansas City, you pay about $2.50 a month. You see it on your water bill, and it is for stormwater management. It allows us to maintain the catch basins. It allows us to provide street sweeping. We run our household hazardous waste facility. Provides the three times we pick up the leaf and brush drop curbside pickup collection. All of those costs are paid for by that stormwater impervious surface fee, which is calculated based on the amount of either roof area or driveway area that you have that doesn't allow water to soak into the ground on. Generates about $10 million a year citywide. I'm going to be proposing, and there will have to be an election to do that, is allow that to lift the cap. Currently, that cap is, again, about $2.50 a month or $30 per year, and would allow it to float up to maintain that system on an inflationary basis going forward. As I mentioned, it talks about, I mentioned catch basins. We have 30,000 catch basins in this city. It also allows us to maintain the third longest system of levees in the country. New Orleans has the most, Sacramento, California has the second, Kansas City has the third in terms of levees. And so it allows us to maintain those systems. And this would allow an inflationary increase, allow us to adjust that on an annual basis, but again allow as costs continue to increase, and we're in an increasing cost system as in most of our utilities, would allow us to maintain that issue. Again, because of the way the ballot was structured, we'll have to go back and ask voters for their approval, but it would be to continue those programs and allow a bit of an inflationary increase in those costs as we go forward. The second proposal that we are ruminating on at City Hall would be to address the need to affordably replace curbs and sidewalks throughout the city. How many of you have, in front of your houses, have sidewalks that are in need of repair? If I go around town, the variations of, depending on where I'm at, the numbers, the percentage is significantly higher. Sidewalks and curbs are the lowest rated city service in our annual citizen satisfaction survey. And that is because we don't provide any services for sidewalks for the residents. Curbs and sidewalk repair and replacement are handled by special assessment, and it costs about $250,000 to replace the curbs and walks along a one-block section. So if you've got curbs and sidewalks on both sides of the street of one block, it costs the city about $250,000 to replace all of that out, tear all that out and replace it. All of those costs, unless the Public Improvements Advisory Committee chooses to participate, are assessable back to the property owner. So one of the things that we deal with is the need to replace curbs and sidewalks, and folks then dealing with a $4,000 to $5,000 special assessment cost. For folks on fixed incomes or limited incomes, that is an insurmountable burden. Even allowing those costs to be paid over 10 years is still a $400 to $500 annual bill for what many consider to be a basic function of the city. And so what we are proposing is a change in how we would fund those issues. But you can see that given that there are almost 4,000 miles of sidewalks in this city, you can see the magnitude of the problem that we would be dealing with to try to take this on as a city. So what we're proposing is this. Suppose you were the owner of a $140,000 home, which is the median sales price of a home in Kansas City, Missouri. Would you support a property tax, an annual property tax of $50 to $75 per year? The change would be how fast we were to replace the sidewalks, whether we were to replace the sidewalks on about a 25-year cycle or a 40-year cycle. To never have to worry about, would you be willing to pay that $50 to $75 fee as part of your property taxes to never have to worry about replacing or repairing your curbs and sidewalks again? And that's one of the things we're considering is a proposal that would allow us to take that over. If the majority of residents would say yes to that initiative, then over the next 30 years, all of our sidewalks could be repaired or replaced. And I would, when you repair and replace your curbs and sidewalks, like what is very common, a lot of the curbs and sidewalks have been upgraded in the Brookside, Waldo area. I take a look at the green impact zone where we were able to use very creative grant writing to use federal funds, stimulus funds, to replace all the curbs and sidewalks basically east of True, south of 39th Street. It does phenomenal for changing the perception of the condition of the housing stock and the investment in the infrastructure. We need to replicate that citywide. We need to be able to provide funding for areas of town that were annexed that don't have any sidewalks, and that is areas roughly south of 85th Street in the city and north of the river and south of the Vivian Road up north. So it's a potential long-term funding mechanism that would allow the city to just go in, use its economies of scale, and replace sidewalks as we move forward. And it would no longer be a responsibility of an individual property owner. So that's something we will be asking the mayor and the city council to consider. If that's one thing they would like to take to the voters. Lastly, I will be asking the mayor and city council to consider asking the voters to approve a $500 million general obligation bond program for basic infrastructure. This program would provide up to $50 million a year for the next 10 to 12 years to upgrade parks, reconstruct streets, or address safety and capacity needs in roads and bridges throughout the city. Examples that I'm thinking would be eligible projects would be to continue to rebuild Warnell Road. Some of you may remember we reconstructed with the last bond program, we reconstructed Warnell Road from 79th south to roughly Ward Parkway, where Ward Parkway comes in, joins in. We need to reconstruct Warnell Road north to the plaza. We need to reconstruct 75th Street. We need to reconstruct 63rd Street. Most of our arterial roads, some of our roads downtown, are 120 years old or more. So how do we come up with a funding mechanism that allows that issue to be done? We would also look at dealing with some of our needs, especially in the south part of the city, where we do not have where the roads need to be straightened. An example would be Warnell Road, south of I-435. If you've ever ridden that road, driven that road to Martin City, you can see how it starts to curve and get narrow and windy. It's not a safe road. Red Bridge Road is another example of a road that needs to have curbs and gutters added to it and widened just to make it safer, add bike lanes, all the pedestrian amenities associated with it. Again, this would not be for new projects. This would be just for reconstructing what we've already got out of there. under my proposal, projects would be determined by the Public Improvements Advisory Committee. So it would be a citizen-based approach to coming through these projects and saying these are our priority projects. But again, it would be a 10 to 12 year program to reconstruct a lot of the infrastructure that has just gotten a little long in the tooth in Kansas City. Again, I'll go back to that $140,000 home. The financial impact of this initiative would be about $18 per year, with a cumulative total of $180 after 10 or 12 years. So it's not an insignificant ask, but it is an ask nevertheless to try to continue to replace the infrastructure. If we were able to get those three issues, deal with our stormwater system, deal with our curbs and walks, and deal with the general infrastructure, the streets, the bridges, the buildings in the city, the parks that just need upgrades, we would be in, I think, have really be one of the first cities in the country to comprehensively have addressed all of its major infrastructure categories. Other cities are still wrestling with how do we start to upgrade our water and sewer system. You may have noticed a big water main break that got a lot of attention in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, where it flooded the Pauley Arena at UCLA. The city of Los Angeles is on about a 350-year water main replacement program, and their infrastructure is newer than ours. We're trying to do a 100-year replacement cycle, so we're farther along than a lot of other cities in this country. What I'm asking us as residents is to continue that investment, push through this, recognizing it'll be a burden on the short term, but in the long term, the city will be in a better position to expand and meet the needs of a changing population and make it attractive. So rebuilding a city is not cheap, but it must be done to keep the city vital now and into the future. Deferring infrastructure repair, which this city has been doing for decades, only makes the cost that much higher. The city and its residents need to continue the work of reinvesting in itself so that our children and grandchildren continue to want to call Kansas City home. So thank you very much. I just wanted to touch on those conversations as a way to bridge the dialogue as we go forward about the need for continued infrastructure investment in the city. We've got a great city. We're on a roll in terms of our ability to attract both national and international attention. And it's when people get into the city, it's amazed at how people are, when we see visitors from other parts of the country, they're, we didn't even know this was here. And it's been a hidden secret of ours. Now it's time to make sure that we continue to make that investment worthwhile going forward. So I'm happy to answer any questions, but I wanted to just quickly talk about three initiatives you'll probably be hearing more about in the paper as we go forward. Probably won't be any conversations in 2015 because of the municipal election process will take up most of my boss's time. The mayor and city council will be either running for election or some of those issues. But it was my idea to try to get these conversations out there about the need for continued infrastructure investment, not only to prime the campaign, if you will, to have something for substantive for folks to talk about, but also to start to continue to, what do we need to do as a city to continue to build on the great efforts that we've done just in the last couple of years. So really all of this done, the fixing of the water infrastructure, the fixing of the sewer infrastructure, dealing with our parks operations, our street operations, those types of issues, all been done in the last 2 years. So we have a proven track record. When Kansas City sets its mind to something, it's able to achieve it in fairly short order. So I just want to keep the conversation going about how we have to continue to invest, rebuild the city, hopefully with your support. We have had great support in the past, and we will continue to do that going forward. But I think we've got a proven track record that if you give us the resources, we're able to do great things with it and help build the city both now and into the future. So thank you very much. Lastly, go Chiefs. More importantly, go Royals. So thank you very much.
You're listening to Kansas City City Manager Troy Schulte talking about the need for infrastructure investment in the Kansas City area. We owe you a few messages. You're listening to the All Souls Forum. We'll be right back.
Support for 90.1 FM KKFI provided by Paul Grahovic and Quindaro Gardens Mutual Aid Society. You can Google them or UMKC Community University to find out about moving to an urban farmstead neighborhood with a giant group garden.
A few decades ago, Kansas City had teachers and firefighters strikes, but it's been years. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we interview Joe Burns, who thinks we should bring back the public sector strike. Then the Obama administration has been tough on whistleblowers, but there's a program at OSHA which is prosecuting employers who retaliate against workers who blow the whistle on health and safety violations. Tune in to Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday 5 a.m.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you talk a little bit about citywide sinking of traffic lights? When this moves towards completion or attains completion, do you anticipate that this might actually increase the efforts to deal with air pollution since cars would be idling at lights less?
Yes, that's been one of those initiatives. We have about 450 traffic signals in the city. You may remember there was a lot of drama a couple years ago when we proposed to get rid of 37 signals that are the old signals. Primarily they were on in the urban core on the east side that predate Bruce R. Watkins' construction. When Highway 71 was reconstructed through the city, it radically changed traffic and commuting patterns throughout the city. So one of the issues that we proposed was to get rid of a lot of these old signals. We actually have about, of that 450 traffic signals, we think we have about 120 to 160, depending on continuing traffic studies, that we don't even need, that can be replaced either with pedestrian flashers, which we're seeing along Main Street or some of those issues, or simply stop signs, because there's just far fewer traffic. So getting the system modernized is allowing us to not only take out the infrastructure we don't need anymore because of changing traffic, but then will allow us to sync the systems up so that we can, once a system is in, it's brought in with the new system, it's automated, it will allow us to remotely control it, we can change those systems. We're starting to do that very slowly. Some of our corridors have already been done. 63rd Street's a corridor that's been done, 75th Street's a corridor that's been done. We're currently doing Paseo and Troost, our corridors that we're working on right now, and we're going to be, I think, eventually doing this later this year or first next spring, the Truman Road corridor. But we've got a lot more corridors that we need to upgrade, especially through downtown. So synchronization of our signal of our traffic signals and the reduction in the number of traffic signals will greatly help air quality efforts, but it will also just allow us to do a modernized traffic control system, allows to put other amenities in there, bicycle amenities, some of those other issues. So we're making steps. Part of what I would address in a general obligation bond program would be to accelerate that process. Right now, we try to scrape together out of the existing budget about $1 million a year for traffic signal improvements, which allow us to do about 3 signals a year. So when you figure we got 450, if you can get rid of the 125, you're on a 100-year replacement cycle for traffic signals. Unfortunately, the infrastructure doesn't last that long, so we're going to have to find a way to accelerate that process. But we've shown good progress when we can get a system synchronized, and I noticed today that Grand Avenue coming through downtown, I was coming here, isn't one of those that's synchronized. So that's going to go on my list. But those have improved benefits, not only for the neighborhoods, but for the air quality. But the first step in that was to just get rid of the old stuff that we don't even need, so that we don't have to spend $250,000 to $350,000 per signal to upgrade it. So, but that's been an interesting conversation. Some of you may be aware that was perceived as a disinvestment, and that was never the case. It's really a chance to just modernize and change how people, a lot of our signals that went in that we were proposing to remove were put in right before the war or right after the war, and the war I'm talking about is World War II. So when Cleveland was a major north-south corridor in the 1940s, it needed a lot of traffic signals. It doesn't need a lot of traffic signals now because that traffic has shifted to Bruce R. Watkins and elsewhere. So it's those conversations that we need to have before we can upgrade the system going forward. But it's a key part of any investment program. And I think something that would be very attractive is there's nothing worse than having to idle in traffic and then move another 400 feet and idle again.
I'd like to just add, I had the opportunity with the local Code for America Brigade to visit the Traffic Control Center in the Northeast. And I was struck by what a example of innovation in government looks like that's way, way off people's radar. But there are some very competent people who've done some very clever grant writing and created some very impressive infrastructure. And that kind of leads into my question, which has to do with digital infrastructure. And specifically, the looking forward, the necessity of having digital infrastructure that supports community engagement on a par with these traditional land-based substance moving. We've had a couple of recent experiences with votes where the plans for doing physical things got out ahead of the understanding of what the public, where the public's mind was, and of course, waiting until an election is expensive. So, what thinking is going on? And besides open government, which you can talk about, to think about 21st century digital engagement. We had an interesting article in the Times yesterday, so it's timely, I think, to wonder about whether there should be a fourth initiative, perhaps.
Well, it's a very good question. It's something that the city is wrestling with, is how do we engage our residents, and then two components of that, how do we provide the necessary reach to reach our residents, and then how do we bridge the digital divide? Because there is a huge section of our city that struggles to even get to an access to have home computer. My kids are fortunate that they're 7 and 8 years old, and they've got an iPod, and they've got this stuff. And the way of the future, how you interact with the city government, will be through your smartphone. If there's a service request need, those types of issues, you can tweet now to KCMO 311, and you can do it all online. So you don't, that kind of capacity is what the millennials and younger are looking for. It's an interesting study. You look at how the population is changing. When I may be the last, I'm a Gen Xer. In my mid-40s, I may be the last generation or the next to last generation where getting a car, getting their license for their car at 16 was the big thing they were working for. What you're seeing now amongst young folks is more desire for digital connectivity. They would rather have access to high-speed internet services, high-speed data services, than drive a car. I was talking at a neighborhood picnic last night, and mom was telling me about her 17-year-old son who doesn't have his driver's license yet, has no desire to get his driver's license, but does want high-speed data. Completely unfathomable to me. I couldn't wait. When I turned 16, I was there that morning going, I need to sign up for my driver's license. But that attitude is changing, and I think as a city, we've got to be able to adjust how we provide services to provide that connectivity. And it's a different form. It's all digital. So it's not only open data, putting information online, making it accessible, doing all those, but it's that interactivity. So one of the issues is, you know, we're going to be adding the ability to text 911. That's kind of a foreign concept in my mind, but to younger folks, they don't want to make the phone call. They just want to send a text. So we've got to be able to text. We've got to be able to text and answer 911 calls as a public safety. One of the things we are doing is, you may have read briefly, and we're still in the formative stages of trying to figure out exactly how that works. Like, is along our 2.2 mile downtown streetcar starter line, we're working with Cisco to make that what we're calling a smart network. So it'll have smart lighting. It'll have cameras. It'll have Wi-Fi capability along the route, so it'll be a smart system. And the fun thing about Cisco is that they're working with, right now they're working with three cities. They're working with Hamburg, Germany, Barcelona, Spain, London, England, and Kansas City, Missouri, to create this kind of futuristic approach to smart city design in terms of incorporating infrastructure, making sure that conduit is laid so that you've got fiber, so that you've got wireless capabilities, Wi-Fi capabilities. Not really sure what's going to evolve out of that, but they want to be able to, they envision a way that as you're riding the streetcar line, businesses and restaurants along the streetcar line could push to your cell phone, hey, stop in at Anton's for a lunch special from 11 to 1 as you're riding the streetcar line. It prompts you right before you have to stop for Anton's. That's the way public services are evolving. And it's up to us to figure out how we get there. I'm not sure how we do, but I think it's an issue of how do we deal with the digital divide, making sure that we have folks have access. We've got all of our community centers have now Wi-Fi capability. We, as part of the Google Fiber agreement, required that 300 city facilities, including schools, will be the first to be connected to Google Fiber. So all the schools in Kansas City, all the community center, all the libraries will be provided Google Fiber, that high-speed access at no cost. Again, I'm not sure how that's going to evolve and what terms of the needs, what it's going to generate, but I think it's up to the public public service providers in the future to provide that basic infrastructure. So, you know, the conversation for the last 150 years in Kansas City, water, sewer, streets, roads. I think for the next 150 years, it's going to be water, sewer, streets, roads, fiber, wireless, high-speed data, those types of issues. It's adding to the overall infrastructure mix that the city has to be responsible for. But I'm not sure what if somebody can figure out where we're going with the technology, I think there's a lot of money to be made in it. That's why I can't figure it out, which tells you I won't make any money on the deal because I'm still amazed at how this thing is evolving. And it really is a generational issue that the younger kids are, the younger folks are really connected into this. I tell a story about I have an iPad at home that I can barely run. I'm smart enough, but I can turn it over to my 7-year-old, and he can get it maneuvered through it. He's never had any training on it, never done. It's intrinsic with them that they know how to connect it. That's, I think, where the city is headed. I think it's up to us to provide the infrastructure to support that services and make sure we do what we can to bridge the digital divide. But as information gets smaller and gets faster, it's going to be behooves on the city to figure out a way to respond. We've had a number of conversations about smart cars, the driverless cars that are starting to see, you're starting to see conversations about that. What does that pose? We've got the most highway miles per capita in the country. I would think we could probably be in a position to where we could be an early trendsetter or an early setter for that type of technology to come in because we've got more highway miles, which is where that information is designed. So, again, can Kansas City be innovative in trying to address those needs and identify what's just over the horizon, if you will? I don't know if I'm answering your question because I'm really struggling with how do we engage that digital technology, that digital responsibility, adapt that traditional services. But I think we've got to continue to make those kind of investments. So, you know, one of the things that we're doing is as we replace the water and sewer systems in the city, we're looking at is it possible to lay conduit as we replace the water lines? And will that conduit provide capability for the further expansion of fiber and some of those types of issues? Or there's an entirely different debate that says, well, maybe we should be going not worried about fiber, but going all towards wireless. So it's your head hurts after a while as to where technology is going. It's fun, but I think it's one of those cities are going to have to be adaptable to whatever the need is and be flexible with the use of their technology in order to make it very attractive for the new generation to come in. They will expect the water, sewer, infrastructure, street, sidewalks, all of that infrastructure to work. They will expect that. They will be demanding these additional applications and capacities that right now cities are struggling with throughout the country.
This changes the subject just a bit. What are your opinions on the rail system and the airport?
The rail system, I think, is, again, a generational type of an issue that I think we're going to have to figure out a way to augment our public transportation. If not for us, it's for what I would call the next generation of folks, again, who are more minded towards data capacity than they are in owning a car. I think that 2 mile starter line will drive development in the core. I think an expansion eventually to UMKC is critical, from a connectivity issue for that main corridor issue. I'd like to see it happen. I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation about how we get there. But I think that's probably, again, it's a generational issue where we've got to figure out a way in the city to drive density back into the city. Because it's very expensive long-term to have infrastructure spread, streets, roads, bridges, all that throughout this city. So if we can drive density, get our population into the 700,000, 800,000 population, it's more affordable for all of us if we can drive the density. And one thing that we've got to do is augment our transportation system. And what has historically worked is a rail system attracts a different mix of users to our transit system than the traditional rubber-tired approach. Now, I think the bus rapid transit, the MAX system, has been very successful in those corridors. I think you've got to have all of them. You've got to have a standard bus system, you've got to have a bus rapid transit system, and you've got to have some rail components as we go forward. Again, I think it's an ongoing debate as how we're going to get there, but I think it's one of those things. Every city in the country is making, most major cities are making investments in rail. So it's not something that we're doing way out in front of that no one else is doing. We're seeing this nationally. As for the airport, the conversation about the airport is really if we need to spend $500 to $600 million fixing up the airport, would we be better off to try to spend $1 billion and deal with and fix the issue for, again, a multi-generational fix. Get something that works 30 to 40 years into the future as opposed to spending $500 to $600 million and buying us 10 to 15 years of investment. KCI is a great facility. It was designed, for those of you may recall, as the TWA World Hub. It's really designed to have 90 gates, 30 in each terminal. It was designed in an era before all the security provisions, some of those issues. And what we have done based on a review of the airline consolidation, we think we can probably operate a more efficient, modern terminal that has 25 gates or 30 gates more efficiently and effectively and provide the needs long-term for Kansas City than trying to maintain a terminal that was originally designed for 90, has been operated with 60 gates, and then now with the closure of Terminal A is operating with 40 gates. So we have to continue to refine that approach. That conversation is still going with the airlines. The airlines aren't scheduled to make a recommendation back to the city in terms of what they're willing to participate in terms of a financial investment until October of 2015. But the conversation is, I think, is what's the best overall spend? We know we got to spend $500 million fixing up what we've got. Are we better off spending a little bit more and getting ourselves something for the next 30 to 40 years? Or are we comfortable and can we manage with what we've got, with a major rehab? But I think in order to modernize KCI in some mechanism or another, I think you've got to kind of go back and reset the wheel. And I think you can maintain all the convenience issues that you look at. Have any of you ever flown through Austin Bergstrom Airport in Austin, Texas? If you have, you'll notice something familiar. It looks remarkably like KCI. It's a 1990s version of KCI. KCI was a model that was then replicated at Dallas-Fort Worth in a number of areas. And then it was upgraded at Dallas at Austin Bergstrom. And the difference is, you see, it's a little deeper, and it's got kind of a two-layer, so they put the baggage claim down on the second floor. I envision when we get done, we'll have something that may look, if we build a new terminal, looks remarkably like KCI, because it's a pretty much that model works well. Just like we were trendsetters with our stadium designs back in the 1970s, everyone built the Universal Stadium and then abandoned it. We built the separate stadiums, and everyone's come back to our way of thinking. Same way with KCI. I think when we get through this process with the airlines, you'll see a terminal configuration, either a major rehab or a new construction that looks remarkably similar and operates in much the same way that KCI does. But you will probably have to have more, even under a rehab operation or a new terminal, you're going to have a reconfiguration of security features at the facility. But we've, again, the whole concept of the need to make an investment and what's the right way to spend the money and what's the best return on that investment. I guess the jury's still out, but from a staff standpoint, I think it's important that we have the conversation about, if we've got to spend $500 million anyway, what's the best return on investment, and would we be better off to spend a little bit more and buy ourselves something that can serve the city's needs for the next 30 to 40 years, or can we make KCI work for us? But KCI, the new KCI, whether it's a new terminal or a major rehab, will probably be one terminal or somehow connect the two terminals that are there, because we don't need as much space as we've got there, because there's just fewer and fewer airlines. And the way the things are going, again, with that, I mentioned the automation, the days of having standalone facilities. We're trying to design an airline that you can actually just take a computer chip, one of those smart cards or whatever, that you just plug and play. The Southwest airline could go, I'm at gate 16 and the plane lands at gate 23, the person at the just simply unplugs the pulls the port out of the computer, walks down to gate 23 and plugs it in, and that's where Southwest Airlines pops up in the future. So that's where the industry is going. Get back to that technology investment. How do we design infrastructure that allows that kind of portability 20, 25, 30 years from now? Because it's going to be radically different than what we've done before. The fundamentals will still have to be provided, but it's got to be reconfigured in an entirely different way. So cities really across the country have to look around the curve to figure out what's going on, because it's not the same old city government, it's not the same old airport, it's not the same old, where it's worked for decades around here, and that's what we're struggling with. I wish I knew the answer, but I think it's a good conversation. Again, that conversation will probably take another couple of years to work through.
A detail or minor question. Right now, with all the infrastructure changes, especially Google, is there any one place where we can find out where we're going to be trapped? I was recently coming out of an area that had only one entrance to the residence, and they were paving the roads, so you couldn't get out. Is there some place the city has where all of these things are going on, when the permits issued? I know I'm going to be trapped here because Google's going to be drilling.
We're working on it. We have. I wish I could tell you we would be available right now. We are creating a new online permitting system that the council just made the investment for in the last 6 months, and that's underway. But that's about a 12 to 18 month implementation system. But my goal in that process is that if you want a building permit from the city, or if you're interested in interacting with the city in terms of a permit, looking at where the construction is occurring, all of that stuff, you'll be able to pull it up online at 2 a.m. in the morning while sitting in your kitchen in your underwear. So you don't have to talk to them. You don't have to call 311 and know this type of stuff. The technology's out there. We're making the investment, but we're probably a year or a year and a half away from having that all in a centralized location. The one thing we struggle with is just keeping track of where Google, for example, be fun to be a company with a $40 billion balance sheet and just deciding they're going to get into the utility business and figuring out how they do it as they go along. It's been fascinating to watch them get into this business and use us as a guinea pig on that process. So I wish I could tell you where Google is going to be tomorrow, let alone a week from now. But that's the process. I think hopefully, again, using technology, having the communication, all the various systems, not only us, but KCP&L, Missouri Gas Energy, talk to a common system, should hopefully allow us to get better at that. But we're at least 12 to 18 months away from the city perspective having that technology.
I would like to encourage the city to be more pedestrian-friendly and more bicycle-friendly. And so when we're concerned, it seems like much more emphasis is put on the cars. So my daughter, who is in Paris, was here recently, and we had the good fortune of going to the bike shop at 51st and Truth. We got bikes, but then the question was, where could you safely ride a bike? And where can you safely walk?
Yeah, I think that's, again, the changing dynamics of what the city has to be responsible for. Part of the issues of looking at, we've been adding bike lanes and bike sharrows and bike routes and some of those issues. But a lot of envision as we go forward through a reconstruction program or these redesign programs or even just an expanded striping program, a lot of what I would call our 3 and 5 lane roads that we've got probably need to be compressed down so that there are 2 lanes of traffic and then a lane on each side to support bicycles, more of those types of pedestrian crossings. We were able to make an investment just with the parks, the sales tax for streets. We were able to go back out and actually paint the pedestrian crossings. And so we're adding the new design. We'll be adding some. We're working our way out of downtown. We've done the schools. We're going to hit the plaza hopefully before the Plaza Art Fair. And we head into the holiday season, making it much more visible. Again, trying to increase pedestrian connectivity. We've got an ADA compliance issue. The feds have mandated we fix all of our non-accessible curbs and sidewalks at the corners. We have 5,000 curbs and corners in the city that aren't pedestrian accessible in terms of the ramps. Each one of those is about, to do an intersection is about $20,000. You start to see how big the magnitude is of the investment needed to make those upgrades. So we can do a lot as we resurface the roads to put in bike lanes and some of those issues. But again, the amenities are what folks are asking for, is all the stuff that traditionally the city didn't pay attention to. We were focused on roads, water, and sewer. Now it's roads, water, and sewer, bike lanes, pedestrian lanes, digital capacity, all this other stuff. So the responsibility of the city is getting broader on a daily basis, and we've got to be able to adapt and respond. But I agree with you. We're, as part of that process of upgrading and changing streets, there's a concept called road diets out there. As streets are reconstructed, they're narrowed, they put in bike lanes, they put in that area, they put in more pedestrian amenities, make it easier to get across. The intersection here at Brookside and Main at Cleaver 2 Boulevard is probably one of the most frightening intersections to try to cross. So from a connectivity standpoint, how do you connect a civic asset at the Nelson Museum, UMKC, and the plaza? And you've got to cross these big roadways, and you do it, and the light system is set up really on a standard 30 seconds. And you're sprinting across that. So we have got to fundamentally change how we approach the perspective. It's going to change how our traffic engineers have to approach the world. And so those are the part of the conversations about how do we do that. The days of building 5 and 6 lane roads, I think, are over in Kansas City. Actually, construction costs on some of those new the traditional parkway system, one of the things we wrestle with in the city, to build out some of the parkway systems up north as recommended, it's $10 million a mile to construct those systems. With the wide medians and the 2 lanes of road and the bike path, it's simply not affordable. So we've got to come up with a different way of how do you get a boulevard on parkway feel without spending $10 million a mile And that's what we've got to wrestle with going forward.
Since the subject of Google came up, we have high-speed Google.
Do you like it?
And I just love the way my TV works and my computer works. So when people ask me, how do you like Google? Well, personally, it's fine. I have a hard time seeing or envisioning at my age exactly what Google's going to do for the city. And we've had it here for about, a year and a half now? It started to go in. What kind of changes are you seeing, or benefits from having Google Fiber, or detriments? Is there any change so far in the system, in the city in general?
From a functional standpoint, I don't see much of a benefit, a direct benefit to it. From a national and international perspective, cities generate a whole lot of buzz. And it's all about, I think, the conversation about what's the potential. Right now, I think it's just what we're seeing is, we got better reception, it's quicker, it's easier to download movies. But what you're seeing is an influx of young folks that kind of have an entrepreneurial spirit, want to take advantage of the high-speed fiber. There's a startup village over here at the State Line and 39th Street between KCK and KCMO, where you're bringing in folks that really want high-speed access for data-driven decision-making processes. I don't know what's going to come out of that, but it's again, you never know what's going to be the next big thing. But it's obviously generating a lot of buzz nationally and internationally for Kansas City, which then attracts potentially new talent, new investment. We'll see. But right now, I think we get better TV reception. And the detriment, Ben, we've had the town torn up for about the last year and a half. The good thing is I can no longer say all the metal plates in the road are no longer the water department. They're Google Fiber. But it's working through those issues about how do we get the infrastructure in place. What the outcome of it is, I don't know, but I think the city's well positioned to take advantage of it if there is an outcome. So yeah, I'm with you. I wrestle with the benefit versus the calls I get about folks tearing up their fence line and parking line and broken sidewalks. I've got an assistant city manager. That's all he does is just deal with these issues throughout the city. But once we get through it, hopefully we're in a better position long term to say, we were the first, and as a result, we've got some of these incubated companies that have come to Kansas City for that purpose. And it maybe creates, maybe does nothing, but it maybe creates a $20,000, and it creates the new Cerner. And then we go, that's the greatest investment the city ever made. So we don't know. It's too early to tell. Sir.
I have a twofer for you. Improving traffic flow and removing stoplights. When are we going to move the stoplights on Bruce R. Watkins pathway?
That is a state of Missouri issue, and as part of a settlement, I think there's a 30-year requirement as part of that agreement. So I think we have another 15 years or so before those streetlights can or traffic signals can ever be removed. That's one of those issues that when we have routine conversations, it comes up about how do we do that. There's enough, and can you do some stuff differently as you go forward? But I think we've got another 10 or 15 years before we can legally even begin to have the conversation about removing the traffic signals at along Bruce R. Watkins. So it's going to be a while.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Kansas City City Manager Troy Schulte talking about the need for infrastructure investment in the Kansas City area. This program was produced and edited for broadcast by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and all the staff at All Souls who provide us the raw materials for the show each week and do a wonderful job of recording it. This program was recorded on September 7th at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. Theme music by Kansas City musician Fred Potter. Join us next week, same time, same place, for another All Souls Forum. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for Jazz in the Afternoon with Jeff Harshbarger.